Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
The interconnections between energy use and the global environment are inescapable. Polar ice cap melting, sea level rise, extensive drought, and more intensive storms are all attributed to a change in global climate. California and the global community face a tremendous challenge, reducing carbon emissions while maintaining a vigorous economy. Fluctuating energy prices, a faltering economy, and global insecurity call for a different approach. Energy efficiency will almost certainly be a cornerstone in our policies for reducing carbon emissions because it offers both environmental and economic advantages. This aptly described low-hanging fruit is one of the cheapest and fastest measures to implement as a source of new energy. It's not as sexy as wind turbines, electric cars, or pastures of shiny solar panels. It's even rather hard to define. Energy efficiency is the thousands of little improvements we can make. More and better insulation, clever motors, efficient light bulbs, and changes in consumer behaviors. All of these lead up to reductions in our energy use. 30 years ago, California played a critical role in inventing a collection of technologies and policies that raised the energy efficiency of buildings, appliances, and cars. On October 14th, the Energy Efficiency Center at UC Davis, in partnership with Chevron, launched a series of forums to explore these early innovations, convening the players responsible for planting the seeds and nurturing the growth of energy-efficient technologies and policies. The roots of energy efficiency, how California changed the way the world uses energy, is a three-part series which explores the past as a way to provide guidance, inspiration, and to identify mistakes we should avoid as we forge ahead into the future. What lessons can we learn from the past? What did we find out then that can help us meet the energy and environmental challenges we face now?
California really has the deepest roots around energy efficiency. And I think part of our role is to spread those roots and that knowledge across the rest of the United States and the rest of the world where some of the seeds haven't even been planted yet to take root.
When the first oil embargo occurred in 1973, a striking asymmetry of information existed. While we knew almost exactly where our energy came from, we had almost no idea where our energy went. We didn't know, for example, how much electricity was used for the nation's refrigerators. Turns out, about equal to that supplied by all of our dams, or even how much energy was consumed in buildings. Nor were we aware of how inefficient our lights or cars were. Back then, we had no idea how much energy savings were even possible. Energy use before the 1970s was like the old adage, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Most energy policies before the 1970s addressed the need for increasing supply rather than looking at the other side of the meter, that is, reductions in demand.
The real epiphany was a summer study organized by two of us on the West Coast and Rob Sokolow at Princeton, which we organized for the summer of 1974. That was the first summer after the embargo. And the idea was to look at the efficiency, U.S. efficiency. We discovered that the whole American economy was running in the 10% energy efficiency. And that was an important lesson, because if it had been 80%, we wouldn't have set our sights so high. But if it was 10%, there was a long way to go. Energy was dirt cheap, and what's dirt cheap tends to be treated like dirt. And that now that energy was expensive, we had better learn how to mind our ways, and that there were innumerable opportunities.
In a very short period of time, less than a decade, the foundations of energy efficiency were laid. The basic concepts, the new technologies, and policies were put in place to encourage demand-side reductions. It was the golden age of energy efficiency.
People now don't laugh when you say that the cheapest kilowatt hour and the cheapest barrel of oil and the cheapest thermogas is the one you avoid using. When I started this 36 years ago, in 1972, none of that was true.
So there was a heck of a battle on life cycle costing, and there was another battle on performance standards. So on life cycle costing, we desocialized it and made it a benefit effectively to the consumer rather than to society. And we had to basically stand performance standards on their head.
One of the key ingredients here was looking at and making sure that efficiency played a prominent part in any comprehensive energy legislation. And one of the key parts of that was to hammer in this concept of life cycle costs.
The two things that were done well, I think, was marrying up supply and demand as a principle and a co-relationship, number one. And number two, really putting analytics into play.
Why did California do so well? Well, of course it was Warren Olquist that got it all started. But I think that the fact that within 75 miles was Lawrence Berkeley Lab to do the technology, the Public Utilities Commission, which invented decoupling, may John Bryson be ever forever praised, and the Energy Commission, really made a happy coincidence which carried this wave forward.
By 1981, therefore, much of the essential architecture for energy efficiency is in place in terms of utility efforts, and there's also a full understanding of the linkage and the importance of coordination between utility investment in energy efficiency and the efficiency standards for buildings and equipment that Art talked about at some length. There is an integrated effort to link up the efficiency programs with the standards, to use both to break through the worst of the barriers that prevent inexpensive efficiency from simply emerging in the marketplace. What California understood from the mid-70s is that energy prices alone would not come close to tapping all of the low-cost efficiency available, and that a coordinated combination of incentives and standards was the best way to do it.
Those policies stimulated a change in the way California used electricity. This was reflected in California electricity use, making a right-hand turn, flatlining its energy consumption over the period from 1975 to 2005. Several factors were at play back then and have relevance for today.
Of this difference between the U.S. and California, that about a third of it is actually Title 24, Title 20, and utility energy efficiency policies which we can evaluate. About another third of it is price. California doesn't get much electricity from coal. Our electricity is more expensive than it is for the rest of the country, and price has its elasticities. And so that explains about a third of it. And about a third of it is what I call the Camelot effect. It's just the weather is very nice. Our rates are higher, but our bills are a lot lower, and it's really worked.
We need to engineer another right turn. That is a turn downwards in electricity use. And it's got to be of a similar steepness to meet those goals. Furthermore, that downward turn, or that right turn, must encompass all forms of energy, not just electricity.
In economics, we've seen just tremendous volatility, not just high prices, but volatility in energy prices. And in that respect, it makes good economic sense to have efficiency as the cheapest and most abundant form of energy. And so we not only advertise about that and have energy-saving ideas, we try to manage our own business that way. And it used to be a middle-line business, and now it's at the bottom-line business, and it makes economic sense to do that.
The only way to ensure long-term energy efficiency, in my opinion, is to allow utilities to earn on their investments in it. You need this at the national level. Hopefully, we'll have an energy bill next year that will insist upon and require energy efficiency, or it'll insist upon and require renewables and allow energy efficiency to count.
The technology and design keep improving faster than we use them up. Low-hanging fruit is still mushing up around the ankles. It is still spilling in over the tops of our waders, and the innovation tree continues to pelt our head with more fruit.
California's early innovations have spread throughout the U.S. and beyond. India and China are examples of countries using U.S.-exported technologies and policies in energy efficiency.
If California can move quickly on land use, China pays enormous attention, as I said in my first statement, to what we do here. And so if we can do this right, if we can make significant progress in designing land use to support reduced transportation demand, there's a chance that the Chinese will pick up on that as well.
There's a new effort with ISO to build an energy management standard. this energy management standard, the U.S. took the leadership role in this, but China's part of it, and several other, there's actually 26 countries are actively involved in this new energy management standard. And what's important about it is we're bringing California lessons to this standard. It start with data. You need to know where you are to know where you're going. Second piece is you need a management commitment. If you don't have management commitment, it won't work. So we're bringing that, which we learned in California. And the third piece is we're saying you must have a commitment to continuous improvement. What we've learned in California is if you continuously build upon what you did, you can actually make significant improvements in the energy use of your facility. So that's those are the elements of the standard. We expect it to be available by 2011, and it's the international process is complicated, the negotiations are difficult, but these are some elements that where California is bringing knowledge that will make a big difference internationally.
We hope you will join us in exploring these innovations developed in California.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.